lowest stress hormones you'll ever have is during deep sleep, the most anabolic time, and that's when your muscles actually get stronger from you overusing them.
Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching. Please go hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our very special guest, let's kick it off with our usual Patreon question of the day, which is, what is your favorite thing to do when you're by yourself?
That's pretty private, man.
What a horrible question.
I can start off mine. Mine would be golfing. It could be an activity.
Wait, you like to do that by yourself? What's the question? What do you do when you're by yourself, or what do you like to do by yourself?
Just alone.
What do you prefer to do by yourself?
Okay, I thought it was two different questions.
Oh, yeah,
no. Like, what's something that you enjoy to do whenever
a team guy will go 500 different ways answering that question.
I know, that's why I have one in here. It could be an activity we can just do.
Yeah,
I like
you don't mind leaving the house to do by yourself.
Yeah, it doesn't just have to be like locked in a bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for me, I don't run anymore. Too hard on the body, but I like to hike with a weight vest, and I just find I prefer that. I enjoy that a lot more when I'm doing it by myself. So that's the one thing that I prefer to do alone.
Mm. What's yours?
That same walking.
Yeah,
walking. I like being by myself.
I think mine is messing with my flowers. I like to be in the garden in the morning, just tinkering in my garden.
You and my wife get along great. She can do that for hours.
You feel alone, right?
No, I've got my flowers.
I guess we're in the woods too. I don't feel alone when I'm out there. What about you?
I like to golf. I also enjoy running. I would probably either say running or golf.
Yeah, running, if I still did that, that'd be a good one because I don't like anybody to see me in that much pain and agony. Because some guys just look cool doing it.
Some guys are built for it. Some guys aren't, man.
They're built for it. They look cool doing it.
Hunter just picked it up as a hobby, like as something that he does on a regular basis, and he's training for the Houston Chevron Marathon.
I just did 7 miles this morning again.
Nice.
I've been trying to pound the pavement into submission for years, and it hadn't worked.
It's not. It doesn't go. No, it doesn't.
It wins every time.
I could not. I'm not built to be a runner at all. So.
And I feel like if you hit it too hard, there's holes that come that you know, and then you just step in those.
There you go.
Yeah. Nice Patreon question.
I don't have it. I didn't get that genetic. Mojo had it. I don't have it.
So today we are joined by Dr. Kirk Parsley. He's a former Navy SEAL turned doctor. He's a certified expert in hyperbaric medicine, anti-aging medicine, hormone replacement therapy, and best of all, sleep. He's currently pursuing national certification in psychedelic medicine therapies, and he dedicates his time to advising nonprofits that support the SEAL community and providing healthcare guide to veterans. Welcome to the show, Dr. Parsley.
I'd like to start this off by, man, where'd you come from?
Well, I was born in Houston and lived in...
That's all anybody needs to know, really.
There you go.
Yeah, you're leaving it there. You're a Texas boy and out of Houston.
And lived down in Kima Island, when that was just kind of a fisherman kind of place. We had that cool drawbridge that we got to wait for that when I was a kid.
I grew up in that area.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
So Beaumont and Kima is where I grew up until I was about 8 years old. And then my mom remarried and moved out to Katy, which was a really small town at that time. And you left.
It's not now.
You left downtown Houston and you drove through pastures for 45 minutes until you hit Mason Road. And then you left Mason Road and you went about 5 miles down there before you hit anything. And then there's a few neighborhoods out there and one little strip mall. And, so I grew up there. I was a terrible student my whole life, actually. Once my mom got remarried, had a really, really ugly, abusive stepfather. And, just didn't handle that well for school. That was my only time to be away, and to be a kid. And I started getting D's and F's in like third grade and, got told I was stupid all the time, felt I was stupid, but I was fast and I was strong and I was athletic and I was angry and I liked to get in a lot of fights. And so, I did martial arts and boxing and football and, I got into powerlifting my last year of high school, did some track and field and stuff like that. And so I knew I was a good athlete and, I knew I could do something physical and, I come from a very, very dirt poor sort of blue collar family. And, just kind of our family's value is, if you can serve in the military, you should, And so I always knew I'd go in the military. I didn't really know what. It was largely informed by movies. I didn't have any, good male role models around.
We had good TV though.
TV. Rambo, Heartbreak Ridge,
I feel like Clint Eastwood and Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and all those guys, they kind of set a pretty good standard for us.
They did. Yeah.
Those movies when and then it rolled into the 90s. So you had Samuel L. Jackson, Denzel. Then there's just and the boxers were great. I feel like in the 80s and 90s everybody was a badass.
Yeah, yeah, and everybody was patriotic.
They were.
Everybody loved the country.
Patriotic badass. Yeah. That's kind of what America's supposed to be.
Yeah, everybody loved America and even the Rocky movies, right? Spun around patriotism.
Even our bad guys were freaking American patriots.
Exactly. So, my boxing coach was the Marine recruiter for my hometown. And so I just always assumed I was going to be recon, and then Heartbreak Ridge came out, and there was
recon. That almost gets everybody. And plus, Marines with the freaking best uniforms.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, Marines it is. And then so my fourth year of high school, I went to high school all 4 years, but I only had enough credits to be a sophomore at the end of
let me ask you a question. Knowing what I know about you now, when kids are going into school and they have a bad home life, you'd think school would be a place you could go to get away from that. It would be great in there.
Yeah.
Making bad grades, a lot of kids make bad grades, doesn't have anything to do with their intelligence, just because they don't want to be in there. And was that kind of the route you...
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, I'm tired all the time, because you're sleep deprived. You got the cops at your house every other night. You're screaming and yelling and, breaking and leaving and getting up in the middle of the night and, rushing off to one of my aunt's house or something, and it's just a really disruptive home life. And then I was depressed. I mean, they were married 8 years. I was grounded for probably 7 years and 6 months of that 8 years, I don't know. It was like my only time to let loose and kind of like have fun, but they don't want you having fun. They want you to sit down and behave and listen. And I'm like, I do this at home all the time. Like I have to sit down and be silent all the time at home. And so it was just hard. And I was just filled with anger, which made football great and made, martial arts great, and weightlifting great and all that stuff. So, I literally had my third grade teacher yell to the whole classroom that I was the dumbest kid she had ever taught in her life. And so I believed it. My stepdad told me I was dumb every day. So I was like, well, I guess I'm just dumb. So at some point, it's like, why even try anymore? If you know you're dumb, you're just embarrassing yourself.
Quit.
So be good at what you're good at, Mm-hmm. And so, I was a motorhead too. I fixed up cars and I raced, did drag racing and went to the end of the roads and, put on our headlights and drank beer and whatever, got in fights and chased girls and, whatever. So that was my only social life. And when I came home, we just, clamped down on. And so, that documentary came out. There's a news journalism show, like 60 Minutes. It was called 48 Hours. I don't know if that's still around. And they covered
somewhere.
They covered the first 48 hours of Buds.
And what year is this?
87.
Yeah.
And So I watched that thing and I was just fascinated. And they kept saying, this is the toughest training in the world, toughest training in the world, tough. And I'm like, well, I'm one of the toughest people in the world. I'm going to go through the toughest training in the
world.
So
well.
They did. They sold it so well.
I'll never forget it. The music, that's what set me off too. And that rock and roll hits, and then you hear that helicopter blade on. Mine was a silent option.
Yeah.
Freaking documentary, and then the movie Navy SEALs.
Yeah. So it was on VHS. And I watched it over and over and over again. And then when I knew my Marine recruiter was out of town, I went to the Navy recruiter's office and I said, hey, I want to join the Navy. I want to be a Navy SEAL.
Did he even know what that was?
And the recruiter's like, well, I'd never put in a Navy SEAL before. I have to look into how to do all that and whatever. And they just started that dive fair program. So I joined. You know, everybody graduated high school and all my friends just assumed I graduated too, and then I went off to the Navy. And then, you had to go through boot camp and A school. Then it was different.
What was your rate?
Gunner's mate.
Oh, shit. That's what. Yeah. Okay. Check.
So I went up to. The funny thing is, in boot camp, not a lot of academics, or whatever. But you know, I got the whatever the meritorious advancement or whatever they give to the top guy in the boot camp. And then in A school, I had to go through BEE first, which is just sit in a cubicle, teach yourself a bunch of electronics, go take a test on a computer, get new books, sit in the and it's self-paced. And I think it has like a 75% dropout rate or something, because it's just depressing as hell. I mean, you're literally sitting in one of those little cubicles, and you go to a cage, like a guy behind the window there, you slide your books back and forth. And I graduated top of that, and then I went to A school and graduated top of that, and I was like, well, shit, maybe I'm not dumb after all, you know.
That had to be a good feeling.
And then went through SEAL training.
It is.
And went through SEAL training and did well in the academic portions of that as well. Although they don't ever tell you that, you find out after the fact, because they never tell you do anything good, right? And then I remember really clearly we were about to graduate. And
what class are you?
164. And
what was the last class? Were your instructors were Vietnam guys?
Yeah, I had some Vietnam guys. Yeah.
They beat the shit out of y'all.
Yeah. Right? They were good guys though, man. They were a fun group of dudes. They walked us around to the different SEAL teams and they said, now here's your dream list, and you put down what SEAL teams you want to go to. And it is at that moment I realized, I don't know what a SEAL does.
Oh my gosh. Sitting there like going,
that's pretty interesting, Jimmy. actually, here's an even funnier story. When I was in boot camp, because of the dive fair program, if you remember, one of the benefits of the dive fair program was they give you three chances to take that screening test, right? So I went down, I took the screening test, and I think I must have done exceptionally well. Like I know I did better than anybody in my group. And so the dive motivator pulls me over and he says, hey, we have this training, this morning training for guys who failed the test, but they have their three shots, right? And you know, we coach them on their swimming and whatever, pull-ups and whatever their problems are. Now, I wasn't any kind of great runner, but I did really well in everything else. And he said, and I was a lifeguard and I'd taught swimming lessons and all this other stuff. So he said, you want to come in the morning and help coach these guys? And I was like, sure. Well, I didn't even realize the benefit I was getting, because I got rid of all the stupid regular Navy stuff, because I went there at 4 o'clock in the morning and I didn't get back to
same thing. I got lucky, I got to do the same thing.
And I didn't get back to my company to what, like 8 p.m. or something, because
you can
that.
Get out of shape in boot camp.
Yeah, for sure. And so I went over there and I was doing that, and it got to where I just got to know the dive motivators, and they were holding me back, and I was having coffee and sitting around, you know, BSing with them for an hour and a half after it was done, and then going back to my company. And I remember his name is Petty Officer Winkler. He's a first class. He'd been in for probably 30 years, and he's 7 tours in Vietnam. Great dude. And he said something to me about either jump pay or hazard duty pay or something. And I was like, what do you mean by that? He's like, you know, you get extra money for this. I was like, what do you mean by money? And he's like, what do you mean by money? I'm like, when do they give me money? And he's like, do you not know you're getting paid to be here? And I was like, no. I didn't know I was getting paid. I figured, you know, they're going to give me a place to live. They're going to give me a uniform. They're going to give me a place to eat and, you know, whatever. It's like, what do I need that's money for?
Hilarious.
So that's how naive I was. And so anyway, we walk around the SEAL teams and they say, you know, pick your teams. And I had no idea what a SEAL was or what team did what or why they were any different or why I would choose one over the other. So I just got together with all my buddies and we just put all the same teams. But my class was graduating right when Team 8 was opening. So 95% of my class went to Team 8. And I think only six of us stayed on the West Coast out of my entire class. So that was it. And I went to Team 5. I did three deployments there. I was in for the Gulf War, but I didn't go over for that. And it was just kind of the same training trips, same things, different guys. And I said, well, maybe I'm gonna go. You know, I met a woman. Thought I was gonna get married, and I was like, well, maybe I'll go do something else. And so when I met her, she was getting her master's degree in physical therapy. And so I thought maybe I could do something like that, you know, because you know I read those type of books and I was always interested in nutrition and health to make myself a better athlete, better performer. And so I said, yeah, maybe I'll go to physical therapy school or athletic training. Like physical therapy was the stretch dream. Athletic trainer seemed more realistic. But if you want to go to PT school, you have to have 2,000 hours of volunteer work first. So that's a big enchilada. So I'm like, well, I better get going on that. So I went to San Diego Sports Medicine Center and started volunteering there. And they hired me probably within about a week of being there. They just like were impressed with me and my energy and, you know, responsibility for that age. You know, I was only 24. I started working there pretty quickly, decided I didn't want to be a physical therapist.
Are you still in doing this?
No, I'm out completely.
What year did you come out?
94.
All right, check.
And never expected to go back in the military. Like that chapter was done. I did my thing. And then
when y'all were rotating out in that during those years, what was that like?
My first deployment was PI and Mount Pinatubo blew. And so that whole thing was kind of a fracas. Like half that deployment was trying to clean all that up and went over to Guam. And then from there, the next two deployments were Guam, and we just basically did FID. Like we, you know, went around all the different militaries and trained with their guys. So anyway, decided I was going to do something different, did the volunteer hours, and they hired me, said I didn't want to do that, but I was working with every kind of healthcare provider you could possibly imagine. And we had everything from strength and conditioning coaches to you know, orthopedic surgeons and everything in between. And I got to know some doctors there because of my time in the teams, they were only a little bit older than me. They were like 3-4 years older than me. And they were like, hey, you should be a doctor. And I was like, yeah, pump the brakes there, Sparky.
Dumbest guy in the class.
Right? I'm like, I didn't even graduate high school. Like let's be realistic. And then the owner of San Diego Sports Medicine Center is named Dr. Lee Rice. He overhears the conversation. He comes out in the hallway and he says, Kirk, the question isn't, could you get into medical school? The question is, would you go if you got in? I said, well, of course I'd go if I get in. And he goes, well, then you really have to try, don't you? And I was like, well, that's a really good point.
I hate it when they swing the common sense down, you know, yeah. Especially with a team.
Kind of guilted me into that.
It's so like, whatever they put inside of us, like, oh, I can hear what you're saying, man. Yeah.
It's like, you're kind of being a coward, really. Yeah, like, yeah, that's really what he's saying. It's like, think, yeah. Right? And okay. I was like, oh, well, I guess I really got to, yeah. So then I aimed for that. And when I, and you know, that's pre-internet. So when you went to apply, you had to go buy one of those books, you know, the Kaplan review books or whatever, and you look at the GPAs and MCAT scores and you figure out what schools you're competitive for. And that's when I found out that the military had its own medical school. And I was like, huh. Because I was already married. I already had a kid. I had another kid on the way. And I was like, well, it makes a lot more sense for them to pay me instead of the other way. And I figure I'll get back to the SEAL teams. I'll go get back to the community that made me who I am. And I'll be well-versed in sports medicine and orthopedics. And I was. And when I got back there, I got there right as they were funding the build-out of the rehab facility there. And so they put me in charge, supervised the build-out of that, and I got involved in hiring everybody. We hired the nutritionists, strength and conditioning coaches, the PTs,
all this that. This East shit. Coast?
West Coast. Group one.
Check.
And we brought in Eric Potterat, and we had in...
Great guy.
Yeah, great guy. And we built this amazing
really team. Good guy.
Yeah. Amazing group of people. I mean, we got Olympic Training Center, professional sports team guys.
Which, like, we should have best of the best.
We had the best of the best. And so then I was the dumbest guy around. And so when you're the dumbest guy around, they put you in charge. And they say, supervise this clinic. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to supervise all these people who know more than I do.
They need to be on a T-shirt or a bumper sticker, or the teachers in the classroom, they need to follow that yeah. with what you just said. Yeah. Hey, if someone labels you the dumbest sumbitch in the room, don't worry. You're going to be running the show.
Yep. And so they put me in charge, and my office was in the rehab facility. And what happened to guys, team guys, they don't tell their doctors anything, because, like, that's the guy who can disqualify you.
Worst
like,
patients ever.
Yeah. So it's like they'll lie to your face. I know they'll lie to your face. So I expected to go there and do a bunch of ortho and sports medicine, but we hired all the best of the best, and then I wasn't even useful. And so I'm just sitting in my office with not much to do, and this guy comes in my office and closes the door behind him. He says, hey, let me tell you what's really going on with me, right? And he's like, I can't sleep worth a crap. I'm moody. I'm snapping with my kids. I can't concentrate. My motivation sucks. I'm getting fatter and weaker and slower. I'm doing everything I can. I can't remember anything. I walk in a room. I can't figure out why I'm there. My sex drive sucks. My sexual performance sucks. Like, all this stuff, this big, long list of symptoms. None of it's a disease. I'm a Western-trained physician. I know how to recognize and treat diseases. They don't have any diseases, but they need my help, obviously. This guy does. And so I'm like, all right, I have no idea. But let me just run this big list of tests, and I'll start trying to figure something out. And because I'd been a team guy recently enough, where there were still a ton of guys around that I'd trained and deployed with, and I had a good enough reputation where guys trusted me. And so, you know how it goes. One guy comes in, two, four, six.
Oh, it just takes one.
Yep. And within,
especially if it worked. Like, if you're on this,
within a month, I had 100 guys come in my office, tell me, I mean, I thought they were coaching each other, because I'm like, this is the same story the last guy told. I mean, it was identical. And
we do that.
Yeah. And I know. And I was
and
like,
then they become teachers too. Right. Once you told him, then he'll be like, oh, don't worry. It's what he said.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff.
Yep. And so, I'd heard of, like, combat fatigue and shell shock and stuff from other wars. And I thought, well, maybe it's that. Like, nobody really ever knew what that was, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe I don't know. So let me start looking into that. And so the benefit is, you know, this was 2009, so the team just already had a big reputation. And so I read somebody's book or hear them lecture or watch their TED Talk. And I just call them up and say, hey, I'm a doctor for the West Coast SEAL teams, and I read your book or whatever, and I was wondering if I could train with you or, you know, consult with you and my clients. And every one of them jumped out, you know, jumped through hoops to be helpful. No one ever charged me anything. And so I got to learn a lot really quick, and I just learned a lot of sort of non-traditional stuff. And, you know, because I can't put people on prescription medication either, because then they're disqualified. But I see their labs, and if I gave their labs, I literally did this first thing I got in trouble for is I just tested everything I could think that could possibly be affecting this, which was 98 lab markers, 17 vials of blood. They were going to the hospital to do it. It was costing about $2,500 per patient. So after I did about 150 of them, BuMed was cracking on them. I'm going, wait a second, what's all this about? And again, I didn't really know how to fix it, but I could see like everything anabolic was really low. Everything catabolic was really high. Inflammation was high. Oxidation was high. You know, they, and if I gave their labs to a colleague and said, who do you think this is? They would say 60-year-old guy who's 40 pounds overweight and pre-diabetic. And it was a 28-year-old SEAL with six-pack abs, you know? And so I didn't know, but I was like, I'll see what I can figure out. And I started treating adrenal fatigue. That was kind of a big thing in those around that time. Had a little bit of success with that. Got in trouble for that because apparently it was outside of my scope of practice to give people IV vitamins, which is all, you know, a Myers cocktail was. I wasn't allowed to do that. Got in trouble for that too.
People do it every day now.
Yeah.
Ahead of your time.
Yep. And so I just kept kind of fumbling around, and I think maybe, I mean, I'm embarrassed to tell you how long it took me. I mean, it was a good 9 months of me trying to help the guys when somebody said something about taking Ambien. And I thought, man, it seems like a lot of guys said that. And I put a note in the margin of my page. And when he left, I kept shadow files because, you know, nobody wants any of this in their record. And so I just kept all these shadow files, and I went through every shadow file. Every single guy who was in my office was taking Ambien. And I said, huh, I wonder if that's a problem. Now, I went to medical school. I didn't get a single class on sleep. So I didn't know anything more about sleep than any of the SEALs who came in and talked to me about their sleep. I knew what Ambien was, meaning that I took a pharmacology class and they explained to me that it's a GABA analog and it works by binding a GABA receptor. I didn't really know how that had any effect on sleep, but I knew that's what it did. And, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, they own the information, right? When they test a drug, they pay for all the testing, they own all the testing. And when they apply, they just give the FDA what they want to give them. They don't give them all of it. They give them the most flattering data. But when they get sued, they have to lift up the kimono and show everything. So they had just gotten sued. The producers of Ambien had just recently been sued. And so I had access to all the data. And, you know, and there's, you know, it's really important to know what's going on when you're sleeping, which I didn't know. So I'd been educating myself a lot about what happens during sleep and why it happens and why it doesn't happen and what interferes with it. And there's something called sleep architecture. So if we look at a graph when we do a sleep study on somebody and you have, you know, stages 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it goes back and it comes back 4, 3, 2, and then goes through REM, and that's one sleep cycle. And there's different things going on in different stages. And if you mess with those stages, you aren't getting the full benefit of sleep. And so it turns out that Ambien destroys 80% of REM sleep. And alcohol destroys 80% of deep sleep. So when...
Well, that's how we swallow the Ambien.
Exactly. And because they're SEALs, if one Ambien's good, two's better, and three's probably great. Right. And then a few cocktails.
First of all, two is one, one is none.
Two is so one, one is none. So that's just one. Taught.
That's right.
And then tonight's a duck.
If we're gonna put it on the table,
right.
we are taught certain things.
Yep. I tell my wife that all the time. Two is one, one is
none. Believe us, man. Hey, look, it's kind of like when someone tells us to quit.
Yeah.
Like, man, we'll just tune your ass out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're like, fucking teen guys,
I'm screwing around. I'm screwing around on my phone trying to do something completely irrelevant, and I'm spending an hour. My wife's like, "Can we just not do it?" And I'm like, "No, you don't understand. Yeah. I'm not quitting.
You're not getting this."
And so Ambien decreases REM sleep by 80%, deep sleep by 20%. Alcohol is the opposite. So when I sent guys to do sleep studies, 99.9% stage 2 sleep. No deep sleep, no REM sleep. Now, if you look at the literature, they shouldn't even be able to survive that.
I was going to say, so that's basically not, that's just like getting rest. Not even sleeping. So we should have burned out.
You should be dead. And there's a lot of things in medicine that way. There's like, when you understand the physiology of it and you see it go bad, then you see people who, I mean, you think of like a homeless person who alcoholic or something, like those people should be dead by such a large margin. They should have been dead 10 years ago, like how they survived. So the body can do some amazing stuff. So how these guys were performing is, I mean, that's sheer grit. And so I said, well, let's get everybody off of Ambien and just see how that works. That'd be the first thing we do. But they were taking Ambien because they couldn't sleep, so I had to come up with something else. So I just did a bunch of research. I was like, okay, what's involved in sleep? Like, what nutrients are involved? How does your brain change? What needs to change? And, you know, there's a well-known thing in those days is just popping up kind of in the paleo CrossFit sphere. Everybody's talking about vitamin D3, and that definitely helps with sleep. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to give vitamin D3. And then, you know, that kind of helped. And then I found out, well, you need magnesium for vitamin D3 to work. So I'm going to give them magnesium and vitamin D3. Well, and then you need some melatonin. And so I'm going to give them some melatonin. And so anyway, over the course of about 2 or 3 months, I worked out with all the guys I was working with. This combination of like 7 different supplements. And I was just giving it to them in a worksheet. And like, here, go buy this. It's pre-Amazon. They were going to whatever, the Bonies down at the end of Coronado and you're going across. I think there's 2 health food stores in Coronado to buy it. And then going, and so they're going around buying all this and buying this in a, you know, 90-day supply, a bottle of capsules. And this was a liquid and that was a powder. And they couldn't really travel with it and it was a pain. But it got all their sleep back in order, and every single person that I treated came off of Ambien. And when they came off of Ambien, their testosterone tripled and their free testosterone tripled and quadrupled and their growth hormone increased and their inflammation went down and their insulin sensitivity improved and their, you know, fasting blood glucose went down, fasting insulin went lower. And I had guys, and I was giving some supplements to help testosterone production, just over the counter stuff like DHEA, pregnenolone, things like that you can buy. And I was given this one pharmaceutical called Arimidex, and it's an aromatase inhibitor, and it prevents your testosterone from becoming estrogen. Yeah. And when BuMed found out about that, boy, they really cracked down, suspended my privileges, investigated me, all this stuff. But I had the, you know, the CEO of Team 5 come in and tell me, he said, I've PR'd on 3 different things this year. And I don't mean PR for my old man years. I mean PR my life. Like, he's running faster, lifting more weights, like just, and so I studied more and more about sleep. And you remember those pre and post retreats we did, and we'd bring in lecturers, guest lecturers, whatever. And, you know, when they'd bring in people to talk about whatever, they always brought me in because I was free and that, you know, they owned me. And so I'd go in there and my lecture was all about, and I knew it motivated team guys. My lectures was all about how testosterone was going to go higher and growth hormone was going to go higher.
That's all I need to hear.
You were going to be stronger and you were going to be faster and you were going to be smarter and you're going to have higher sex drive and you're going to, and it was all because of sleep.
You could have slid a blank piece of paper over just a sentence. We'd be like, yeah, right, yeah, there, yeah, bro, whatever,
yep,
you want.
Yep. And so, I shared the stage with all these people, you know, like Rob Wolf and Colonel Grossman and Potterat, right, and like
this freaking guy,
and man, all these guys that were on lecture circuits, and they all started inviting me to their podcast and then invited me to lecture at symposiums because I was the only guy talking about sleep in those days, and definitely the only one talking about sleep and performance. And so then by the time I got out of the military, I kind of already had, you know, this big list of people who wanted to work with me in private consulting, and I became the sleep guy. But I work with people with sleep, nutrition, exercise, and stress mitigation. So like I work on performance overall, but that's what I was best known for. And I went back into brick and mortar with that doctor who came out and made the comment that guilted me into trying. Like, he had opened a concierge practice, and I went, and I was supposed to be his successor. And I went into that practice, and Joe Musselman and I tried to start up the Honor Foundation, and we're going to do a year of rehab on SEALs. Cause once I left that job, I just left a vacuum and they just replaced me with some doctor waiting to go back to residency. And we were going to do this sort of 1 year health makeover while he's doing their educational program and helping them transition and do job applications and all that. We couldn't raise the money for that. So I ended up working just with Lee Rice in there. You know, and I went from SEALs who were broken and beaten up and half dead, trying to tell me everything was perfect and they were in great shape and they didn't need any help, to these really high maintenance, very wealthy people who called me on 4th of July because their 8-year-old son punched their 9-year-old son and they wanted a psyche eval. And,
oh my gosh.
I mean, I'm just like, this ain't my group.
Yeah.
And then the team guys kept haranguing me to make a product out of it because it was such a pain in the butt to travel with all that stuff. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to step away from this for a year. I'm just going to do private consulting. I'm going to start that supplement, and then we can go back into brick and mortar. And that's 10 years ago, and I'm still running that supplement company. I'm still doing private clients. And then I just kept treating all the team guys that I was treating when I was in. And, you know, some of them aged out and went on to other things. But, you know, and, of course, word of mouth, they would tell their friends, and they'd tell their friends. And I really
– that travels faster than a text message with us.
Mm-hmm. And so I've just been – I dedicated about half – and I tell my clients now, I'm like, look, this is a ridiculous price tag, but that's because you're paying for about four or five team guys – as well as paying for yourself. And so if you want it cheaper, you can go somewhere else. So I've been doing that. And now recently the Seal Future Foundation has started paying for all the guys' meds and all that stuff. So now I can treat even more guys now. And I spend about half my time doing that, and about, you know, 40% of my time with private clients, about 10% of my time managing the sleep supplement. And that's my life story right there.
Wow. So you have a branded sleep supplement.
Yep.
What's it called?
Sleep Remedy. Doc Parsley Sleep Remedy. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So
my whole intention was I was going to make that product, and I made it in those stick pouches so that you could just grab a handful of them, throw them in your pocket, and you got a week's worth. My whole plan was I'm just going to sell that to the teams and then just keep that, you know, keep that running big enough just to feed it to SOCOM or whatever, or just the teams. That was fine. I still don't have a contract with the military to this day.
Oh, my gosh.
But we launched it at Paleo FX. Rob Wolf is a business partner in it, and Peter Atia, and we launched it at Paleo FX. And within 3 days of launching it, we were in the black for the company. I was like, all right, well, I guess this is how we're going to do it for a while, you know? And so that's
it. Well, if you put something on the ground that works and then tested it on team guys.
Right.
You forget this, but remember before we became SEALs, if it said tested by Navy SEALs,
yeah, sure.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we do.
Yeah.
That's what we do. And we were talking about this earlier. There's no reason why a team guy should ever suffer once he gets out.
No.
You're asking suffer while you're in. That's how you earn your stripes when you get out and you become a veteran is actually when you get in.
Right, right.
But there's enough of us now that have been out and have established. And the hardest thing that happened to us when they separated us. But it's like each guy had a specialty that he had to find in himself and find out to bring it back to the command.
Right.
If the big Navy was mad at you for, you know, trying out all of these things, have they come back to you since then and said?
So this was the most vindicating story of my entire life. SOCOM hired me. I think they paid me 10 grand about 5 years after I got out. I went to SOCOM. They had all of the healthcare providers for SOCOM in one room. And I did it. I want to say about a 6-hour lecture that they put on their portal. And I did the same thing at Damneck, and they put it on their portal, and they still use it to this day. So I meet docs who are, you know, just started working with the community, and they're like, oh yeah, I know you. I watched your video on this. I'm like,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
So that all turned around. But I'm still the same guy, you know, like I was told when I got there, hey, you know, these SEALs are going to expect special treatment from you because you're a SEAL. And I was like, yeah. And
yeah.
And like, and you can't give it to them. I'm like, yeah, I can. Like, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Like, no, no, you have to treat everybody. I'm like, no, I'm not here to treat techs. Like, nothing against them, but like, I'm here for our guys. I'm here for our community. And it's in the name, special warfare. They get special treatment. Like, that's what I do.
It's in the badge.
Yeah, it's in the badge. It says it right there. And this is being told to me by another SEAL. Like, I had a physician's assistant who is the supervisor of all of the two physicians there. And he was a former SEAL. And he's telling me I can't do this. And I didn't know what to do. Obviously, I just told you the story. I'd figure things out as I went, but I was just going to do whatever worked. And for what, for the Myers,
do something that worked.
You would think, and so now I do the same thing. It's like I incorporate everything. So like I do hormones with guys. I do peptides with guys. I'll help guys get psychedelic treatment if I think that's the right thing. I'd help guys get hyperbarics if that's what they need to do. whatever.
You know why we're so big on the whole seal thing? It's because we know them so much as they'll do it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you got to deal with us.
Well, right. And it's the thing with seals is y'all take everything to the extreme. So right. Your body is run to the extreme. Your mind is run to the extreme. Your sleep, no one can go without sleep like y'all can.
It's a great place to be.
And so
it's a great place to live.
The normal people like me is like, okay, if that's working for him, I mean, it'll definitely.
Right. I mean, that's the sales pitch, right? It's like if it works for them, and I market my private clients that way. I'm like, look, I work with the most performant men in the world.
Yeah.
And I do. And I've worked with professional baseball and professional football. And that's not even close. Come on. I mean, we're not even in the same ballpark. This isn't a sport. You don't get rules. And you don't get to choose the days you're performing. And there's no off season. It's like, it's a totally different game. There's no group that's pushing the envelope harder and for longer. You know?
So do Remember you think, terms? Sorry, scientifically speaking, is there a direct link with that? If you're healing the sleep portion, is the testosterone healing as yeah, well?
Yeah, absolutely. This is another thing that vindicated me. When word got around kind of in the community about me constantly getting cracked down on, in fact, the medical officer at WARCOM came to my office in cold sweats, asking me to turn everybody to turn the heat off of him. And he's like, hey, you tell your guys to back down. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, Kirk, I'm literally getting death threats. People are coming to my office to my face and threatening to kill me if I don't. And he's like, this isn't me. Like, this is coming from BUMED. I'm like, brother, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I didn't. Like, nobody ever talked to me about it. So one of the things that happened when I got in all that trouble, the word got around, and there across the bay there in Point Loma is a Navy Health Research Center. And that's a bunch of PhDs, and all they do is research for the Navy. So they're not publishing stuff out into the greater audience for the most part. And four of those PhDs came over to my office, and they're like, hey, tell us what's been going on. We've been hearing all these stories about this and that. And so I had a whiteboard in my office, and every SEAL who came in my office knew that whiteboard, because I didn't just give people stuff. I lectured and told them why I was doing it, why things were happening. And so I sat there for about 6 hours, and I had all my shadow files. I had all the data, and I'm like, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm seeing. And here's what I've seen here, and here's what I've seen. And this is what I've done here. And so then they started researching all of it. And one of the first things that they did was they looked at total testosterone and total time of sleep. And it was almost a 1-to-1. So 1-to-1, you'd call it causative, right? It was a 0.87. So 87% chance that it was causal, essentially, is what you're looking at. And so if people had high testosterone, they slept well. If they had low testosterone, they didn't sleep well. If you took away their sleep, their testosterone went low. If you gave them more testosterone, their sleep got better.
Why isn't that talked about more? Because you hear, I mean, I know guys in the community are taking testosterone like crazy, and they're also trying to do things for sleep. Why wouldn't you just fix the sleep that would end up fixing the testosterone?
Well, I mean, it's not that simple. So like, when guys would come in my office, they would have, so first of all, it's important to know what a normal scale means, right? Normal scale doesn't have anything to do with performance. So a lot of them come from what's called Framingham data. It says Framingham, Massachusetts, this small town where they just chose it because not a lot of people moved in, not a lot of people moved out. And it was a controlled community. And so for about 30 years, every lab value, every kind of new lab test they found, they would test the blood of these people in this small community. And so when they decided, when they came up with a test for total testosterone, they said, all right, well, you have to be male, you have to have your testicles, and you have to be alive. Those are the three criteria. And so they tested everybody who met those three, and that became the normal range. Well, obviously there were people that were low testosterone, but that still became normal. So the normal range goes from 250 to 1100 nanograms per deciliter, which is a ridiculous range. So what does it tell you if it's 256 or 249 or, you know, 1000? Like, but had they age stratified it, we know the 19-year-old would have been the 1100, and the 85-year-old in the nursing home would have been 250. And so I would get SEALs come in with a total testosterone of 256, 254, and I'd send them to endocrinology because they're 30 years old, you know, 32 years old, and they're in great shape. And they'd say, that's normal. Like, there's nothing to do with it. It's normal. So somebody like that, I mean, the job is what it is. There's going to be sleep deprivation. There's going to be overtraining. There's going to be malnourishment. There's going to be high stress. That's just the way the job is. So I'm probably not going to get that guy to 1,100 just by getting him to sleep better, but I'm going to get him from 250 to 750. So he's in the ballpark. He's still not going to be performing at his best, but I can give him 7 keto DHEAs. It's a kind of DHEA that can only make testosterone and can't go to estrogen. And I can give him, you know, something to block his aromatase, you know, his aromatase enzyme so he doesn't make estrogen. I can maybe get him up to like 1,100 there. But that wears out on men just like it does women, right? And, you know, interestingly, the dominant sex hormone in men and women is testosterone. You know, like women have 10 times more estrogen than men, but you also have 10 times more testosterone than you do estrogen. And men just have a lot more testosterone. But so it's still the primary sex hormone. And so, you know, I can get people up there as long as kind of their body's willing to do that. But there's an age where that drops off. And it's not a hard set. Like I have a former Delta client right now who's 63 years old and he still doesn't need testosterone. But most guys kind of around the 50-ish. Oh,
that life goes into that, beating the hell out of you.
Yeah.
It's almost as if you have to go to sleep. Whatever is in there activates a switch.
Yeah.
And your testosterone is your gasoline. So if you bust your ass and you don't sleep. Because in Buzz, remember, they teach us how to steal sleep.
Right.
You get into the teams, they teach you how to go without it.
Right.
Because you can forget how to sleep.
Right.
No one ever said that to me until I got out. And I was like, hey, man, I think I might have forgot how to do this.
Yeah.
So yeah. Do you think that that's, like, that was a perfect analogy, that testosterone is your gasoline. Do you think that, like, we are born with a certain amount of testosterone to last us until our life's end?
Well, I mean, evolutionarily speaking, across most animals, it's like kind of once you've passed your fertility and child rearing ages, things kind of start to decline. You start going down the other side. Mm-hmm. And there's genetic differences. Some people can handle it. Some people go a lot longer than others, but it does peter out, but lifestyle gets in the way. You know, all sorts of lifestyle choices get in the way, like your food, your nutrition. Environmental toxins are huge because almost every environmental toxin acts like estrogen in the body. And so what I do with my private clients and what I do with SEALs and former SEALs, when are you at your best? You're 25 years old, right? Like around 25, you're physiologically peaked. So I make everybody metabolically 25.
Hunter, do you hear that?
That was yours, 25? I thought it was 27. Is it 25?
It's in that ballpark.
Hunter's 25. So
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. This was in my head the other day. Could you whip your 27-year-old self?
No chance.
Could you?
No chance.
No, me neither.
No chance.
No, I asked myself that before I finished the question. I started laughing.
Yeah.
I was like, if I ran into myself at 27, he would whip my ass.
And you have.
He would beat me to death.
You have to remind yourself of that too all the time because
I mean, I started laughing,
like
bro.
You get in the gym or like you get in competition like. I get so down on myself in the gym. I get so down on myself. I like thinking about, whatever. You get in jujitsu or whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like, and I get so pissed at myself. And then I think, wait a second. I couldn't even beat the 25-year-old me, much less this 25-year-old kid who does as a living. I mean, he wants to be a UFC fighter. Of course he can whip my ass.
Holy crap, man. I think about that, dude. I think my 27-year-old self wouldn't even look at me to whip my own ass, dude.
I know.
I mean, what do you? He's like, bro, I only fight warriors,
yeah,
man.
It's a joke. And I actually learned that from one of my clients or one of my patients when I was working at San Diego Sports Medicine Center. One of my patients, he'd been a really high-level college tennis player. I don't think he might have gone pro for a little bit. He was really high level, and he's like 50 and he still played tennis at a pretty high level. And he was in there for constant injuries, like he was always injured. And then one day he came in and he goes, you know what, I feel so much better today. He said, I was playing this kid and he was 25 years old and I was whipping and he just kept getting the edge on when he kept getting, and I was so mad. And then it occurred to me, if I was 20, if he was playing the 25-year-old me, I'd be whipping his butt. And I thought, oh, so I couldn't even beat the 25-year-old me. Why should I? Oh, okay. And I was like, Oh, that's a very smart point. But I still forget it all the time. You know, like it's easy to get down on yourself.
Whatever that is, it's stitched in there, man. Yeah. It kind of, I'd have to, it was a defining moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I guess that's why when you see when we go to the reunions, which are my favorite, which I don't think we should need to have one big one.
Yeah.
We got the East and West, and we'll always have, it's like, you know, East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
You think rappers have a big beef?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, isn't the Seal Museum, don't they do the big one?
No. They're separated. We've always separated it. I'm pulling one together. We're going to throw one together.
Have you ever done that, was it Fort Myers? Is that
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, Seal Museum.
Have you ever done one of their, funeral services out there?
Oh, no.
So I did.
Somewhere they swim out the reeds. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. So Murph went out there.
Yeah, so I did that a year and a half ago. One of the guys I went through buds with died from COVID.
And Scott
Brower.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was one of my brother's platoon commanders.
Yeah.
Great dude.
Yeah, so Scott and I are super close. He lived right down the street from me.
I didn't see that one coming when he said that.
Yes.
Let me tell you how...
Bro, let me tell you, man.
Let me tell you how terrible this is. So, like, Scott and I went through boot camp, A school, and buds together.
Best dude. Him and his whole family, man.
And then he lives right down the street from me. And I was up in Montana, and I wake up, it was right around New Year's Eve, I wake up to a text from Scott, and he says, "Hey, man, I'm really hurt," and something about COVID. And, you know, Scott, I'm like, well, he's obviously really hurting if he's texting me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, immediately, I'm like, I mean, the second I wake up, I text him, said, I'm going to put in everything you need. Austin Compounding Pharmacy, go down there and get this. And I was using, the frontline doctor's protocol. So that, you know, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, all the medications. And I'd done this for 100 people already. I'd done it for myself and my wife, and like, it works magic. I mean, 2 days later, everybody feels great. And I said, go get all this stuff. and I don't hear from him. And about 4 hours go by, and I'm like, Scott. And I text him, I hear nothing. And a little while later, his wife texts me, and she said, he's feeling really bad, and I took him to the hospital. And I said, all right, what are they doing in the hospital? She said, they're giving him IV. And I said, all right, let him give IV and the steroids and then get him out of there. I said, you right now, while you're waiting, go down to Austin Compounding Pharmacy and get all these meds. And as soon as they're done with his IV, get him out of there, take him home and give him these meds. And she said, oh, okay, she will. And I didn't even know Dee Dee at that time. I mean, I'd met her like once or twice, but I didn't know her. And, she said she would, and then it dragged on a day and a day and a day, and then she texted me and said he was exhausted last night, and he went on the ventilator. He asked him to put him on the ventilator, and I was like, man, that ain't, I mean, 98% chance he's going to die from that. And that sucked. I mean, that one hit me hard.
That was crazy.
That hit me really hard.
We were getting the updates on that, too, and that was just nuts.
So I went down there with another guy, Gillespie, who also went to Buds with us, and he and I swam Scott's ashes out. I'd never been to that museum. I'd never seen that before. That was
something.
That was amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, this is what I'm doing. Like, I had no idea what I was going to do until I saw that. And it's every team guy who dies that year, whether they're cremated or not. So it's like they announce every single person. They have like a shadow box out there. They're folding the flag, giving it to the family. We swam their ashes out. It was an epic event, man.
Yeah.
Every team guy wants to know all that stuff, but we don't have, we need to connect that too.
Yeah.
Well, even for any of our listeners, if you're in the Florida, in that area, Fort Myers, Florida, it is really an incredible place. It's open to the public. You can go and see it, and
you can do their obstacle course too. I did their obstacle course. Oh, nice. Out there. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a great really experience. Neat place.
It was a great
to
experience,
go.
Yeah.
And if the reunions are going on, then it's a barbecue. It's real fun because you've got a bunch of us around there. Same way with the East Coast and the West Coast reunions, if they're even still doing them.
I think, Texas is right in the middle. I think we need to
bring
them all here, man. We just need one big property. Do all the redneck games, man.
So did you go to 2028,
we're doing a one-man reunion for all frogs.
Yeah.
We're going to throw a party, and every SEAL has to be there. It's mandatory. If your ass is above ground, you're showing up.
I think that's an awesome idea.
We're going to start planning right now.
Yeah.
Pass the word.
That's so funny.
I'm serious.
Yeah. I'm
not messing around here.
So how do people buy your sleep remedy? Let's get back to that. Like, well, what are you doing now? How do people get in touch with you?
It turns out I'm a terrible marketer and a terrible businessman, but I think I'm a decent doctor, so I try to stick with that. We only sell it online, so my website is docparsley.com. People can go to, I could create a lander for your folks if you wanted to, and we could do that.
And do you have social media that...
Yeah, I'm on social media. Sleep Remedy is on social media too. So there's Doc Parsley, on Instagram and Facebook and all that. And then there's Kirk Parsley, me. It's on both of those as well. My website has tons of lectures and blogs and then the products on there, but. I don't know if you heard of this thing. There's I'm going to blank on the name of it now, but there's an organization now that qualifies veterans. So if you want to offer a vet code, so we just signed up for that. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be on our page, hopefully in the next few days or something too. Okay. So we can give a code for that.
Veteran discount.
But we could do like a lander for y'all.
Just, that'd be awesome.
What do you want at docparsley.com/ whatever you want?
T&Q.
Yeah. T&Q would be best.
T&Q?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for Team Never Quit.
It's almost as if we had to figure out ways to detox the guys from the life. There's got to be a buds coming out.
Yeah.
Like, we got a buds going in, and then we get used to the life, and there's stuff in there that we do that people say are bad for us, but our life's bad for us. But when you're coming out, there needs to be a ramp coming
there
down.
Absolutely has to be. I mean, we need a pipeline, and right now the only pipeline is like once people have their barrel in their mouth is when they're calling. It's like we need it way before that.
It almost like a reenlistment. You get 2 years at the end of this where your ass belongs to us.
Well, and here's the thing. So when people came to my office and they told me the story, one of the things that the researchers came up with is they researched all of that, and then they came. I was calling it the SEAL syndrome in my lectures, and then they ended up calling it the operator syndrome and publishing it. Now there's a book on it, and it's all over the place, but it's the same thing. And you think about our community, right? So you have chronic sleep deprivation, you're chronically overtrained, everybody's drinking too much, you're traveling all over the place, circadian rhythms all over the place, tons and tons of head injuries, right? So I don't know if y'all have ever on your show talked about the blast injuries, but that's a fascinating topic to talk about how undervalued that. I didn't figure that out till like my last year I was there, how much of what I was seeing, because that affects all the same things. That's affecting your hormones and your sleep and your mood and your sex drive and all that stuff, your brain injuries. And you don't have to get hit in the head to have a brain injury. It's just the overpressurization of the blast. And you know, like every team guy, he's got his backpack, he's got everything, he's got in his backpack, everything's memorized and it goes in exactly the same space, because if he doesn't, he's going to forget it. And every team guy would come to my office and they'd be like, I have to leave my house five times, right? Because I get in my car, I back out, I realize I forgot my badge. I go in and get my badge. I back out, I do this, I remember, oh, shit, I forgot that. And then I miss my turn. The same, same path I've been driving for 20 years, I miss my turn, whatever. And then I walk in a room, I forget why, I walk back out. I remember I walk back in, I forget it. And they'll be like, I'm just getting old. And I'm like, dude, you're 35. Like, that's not old by anybody's standard. And we all learn how to compensate, right? There's so many blast injuries. There's so much overtraining. There's so much chaotic sleep. There's so much environmental toxins. There's so much destruction we've done to our bodies and our brains. But all of our friends are exactly the same way, and we feel like that's normal. Mm-hmm. And we all compensate. We all figure out, like, the backpacks. We all figure out little compensatory techniques, and we almost all do it the same way. And then we leave, and like we were talking about earlier, you go by yourself. Like, you go back to your hometown or you go back to wherever, and you don't have all your boys around, and now you're not normal anymore. And your detriments are, a lot more obvious to you, but you don't know – you don't know why they're there because you never really realized that they were happening. You just slowly started changing your behavior over time because everybody did it and everybody went through the same thing. And now we know, like, you get people's hormones back in order, that improves their performance. There's peptides that help with regeneration. There's peptides that help regenerate your brain. There's hyperbarics that does both of those things. If I had one tool to improve everybody, I'd be hyperbarics. I mean, I'd have people living in a hyperbaric chamber. Psychedelics are amazing as well. I mean, you do like one episode of psychedelics and that gives you the neuroplasticity of like a 12-year-old kid. I mean, you have a brain that you can actually do something with. You know, not forever, but for a few months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you add that with hyperbarics and you add that with hormones and you add that with peptides and you can completely transform people. And I've seen it. I mean, I can't tell you how many guys that, you know, didn't call me until it was way, way, way too late. You know, Chris Lash is one of my best friends in the world.
Great
his,
dude.
His wife called me and said, hey, he's throwing us out of the house.
Yeah.
And things are about to get ugly. And Chris, and Chris, he knows I tell the story and he's perfectly fine with it. That's the hardest SOB I've ever known in my life. I mean, if it can happen, if it can happen to Chris Lash, it can happen to anybody. I'm like,
shit, yeah, he's one of them.
Yeah, and
so I'm, with the sleep remedy, is it there like a hangover to it, like melatonin or
no? So, like the reason the sleep drugs don't work, we didn't go into great detail, but like during deep sleep is when all your hormones are being re-regulated, and that's when you're repairing everything and you're getting rid of all the waste products in your brain, and you're rebalancing. So the whole reason to go to sleep tonight is because you have to repair from today, because mm-hmm. you're using up resources. Like being awake is kind of catabolic. You're kind of using all your body's stores. And so that gets replenished and repaired during deep sleep. And any overtraining, like obviously when you lift weights, you get weaker. You get stronger when you sleep. When you're in sleep, that's the lowest stress hormones you'll ever have is during deep sleep, the most anabolic time, and that's when your muscles actually get stronger from you overusing them.
That's why I like to sleep so much
better. I understand.
That's when you're fighting off infection. That's when
my kid doesn't hear this podcast.
That's when you're repairing like anything that's gone wrong, and then you're preparing, you're restoring all the nutrients and rebalancing all the biochemistry that you need to for tomorrow. So if I could 100% repair and 100% prepare for tomorrow using today as a template, I wouldn't age. I'd wake up exactly the same every single day.
Yeah, but think about how hard that is just because of life's imbalances.
Right. And that's ideal. And we can't do it. When we're young, we can do it, obviously, right? You go to sleep when you're a kid, you sleep 10 hours, you wake up taller and smarter and faster and stronger.
How about that?
Yeah. When you get older, it's like you're trying to like at least be as good as you were the day before, right? And you're trying to catch up. And then the REM sleep is the other part of it. So you have about half of your really useful sleep is deep, and then REM sleep is the other useful half. And that's when you're rehearsing everything, you're emotionally categorizing things. So like if you two get in a scrap over dishes in the sink or something, that should be a nothing burger, right? But if you don't sleep, if you're chronically sleep deprived and your emotions are on edge, maybe that's a big deal, and that's something that lingers. But you also rehearse everything you hear, you rehearse everything you learn, and you figure out what's important information and you attach it to other information. And now you actually know something because you can attach it to five other things you know, and you can think of it from different angles. And so all of that's happening during sleep. So when you take sleep drugs and you mess with that sleep architecture, you're getting rid of REM, or you're getting rid of all of that benefit of that. Or if you're getting rid of deep sleep, you're getting rid of all that.
Man, so AMI is not even a sleep drug. It removes a piece of your sleep. So it's
a dissociative.
Yeah.
So it dissociates your neocortex from your lizard brain, and your lizard brain takes over.
You shouldn't take that stuff at all.
You shouldn't take that at all.
No, my dad takes it. And yeah. That's why I'm so curious.
It's horrible for you.
Yeah,
man.
I would love to get him off.
If you work shift work for a career, or if you're a chronic insomniac, or you take sleep drugs chronically, which is just defined as over 6 months, you die on average 12 years younger.
Oh my gosh.
And that's because sleep is that restorative part. And so if you're chronically insomniac, or if you're a shift worker, you're just circadian rhythms off. So even if you're getting 8 hours of sleep, it's only the benefit of about 4 hours of sleep. So my supplement doesn't do any kind of tricks, right? So, you've probably heard about blue light, right? So blue light goes down, it stimulates the production of melatonin. First thing melatonin does is it stimulates the production of a neuropeptide called GABA, capital G-A-B-A. And that slows down the neocortex and it makes you less responsive to your environment. And really that's all being asleep is, right? Like your eyes and ears and everything's still working, but you just aren't paying attention to it. So you're dissociated from your environment. And then your brain chemistry starts changing and your body's not, you're not using your body and all kinds of things can change. And so sleep drugs, they act like GABA, but 1,000 times stronger. And so then they just completely dissociate your neocortex. But because it's doing it in isolation, none of the other stuff happens.
Yeah,
so you don't get the benefits of sleep. And so all my supplement is, you know, if we lived the way we evolved, it would be about 3 hours after the sun goes down that you'd feel really tired. And that's ideal.
That's the clock.
Right. And then there's reality.
That is me, 100%.
Yeah. And then there's reality, right? There's like... Nobody lives without electricity anymore, and people have lives, and they have after school activities and dinner and whatever. So it's like there's reality, or there's ideal, there's reality, and in between you supplement. And so the idea of my supplement is I want to concentrate everything in your brain that would have concentrated if you spent 3 hours in the darkness before you get ready to go to bed. And it's all nutritional supplements. I mean, it's just tryptophan, 5-hydroxytryptophan, vitamin D3, magnesium, and GABA, you know, and then I put phosphatidylserine in there because it lowers stress hormones. So there's no trick to it. It's just like I'm trying to kind of push you towards what would have happened had you lived ideally, like had you spent 3 hours with no blue light in your eyes and not being excited and not, because you can know, like, you know, you can be sleepy and get stimulated by something and not be sleepy anymore. So you can't.
Oh, there's fuel.
You can't overcharge your brain, and your body temperature needs to go down a little bit. But that's all. I mean, really, sleep hygiene is those three things. You get rid of blue light, don't overstimulate your brain, and lower your body temperature. And that's what all sleep hygiene is.
Detox is go out and out into the woods, you know, where there's nothing stimulating you too much, and drink water.
Right.
Perfect world. Get off all that other stuff. Just let your body flush it. So see what works and can reactivate.
It always amazes me how amazed people are
after that.
That living the way we evolved tends to make them feel better. You know, it's like, oh, these ice baths, they're amazing. It's like, yeah, we used to get cold.
Can you believe that's coming around?
Like saunas, these are amazing. Yeah, we used to get really hot.
Yeah,
fasting, we used to go without food. I mean, that's how we evolved. It's like you're supposed to have little stresses in your life that stretch your ability. Like if everything has to be perfect like this, then stepping out here kills you. You know, it's like, well, I pushed that a little, I pushed that a little, I pushed that a little, and like now I have like a much bigger comfort range and my body works a lot better, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, my clients pay me a lot to work with them for a year. 80% of what I do is lifestyle. I mean, I'm really a health coach that can prescribe medications, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you sleep the way you evolved to sleep, you eat the way you evolved to eat, you exercise the way you evolved to exercise, and you control your stress, right? And that's, you know, whatever. It's different for different people. It can be mindfulness training. It can be spirituality. It can be community. It can be a combination of all three of those.
Mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah, I mean, it's all that stuff. And that's it. And that's like 80% of it right there. And that's what I was doing with the SEALs. I got them off of sleep drugs, decreased their alcohol intake. We already had a nutritionist involved. We had strength and conditioning coach, and we were getting smarter about our exercise. Everything wasn't a run, swim, swim, run, run, swim. Right. And then we had people coming in. I remember doing breath work and teaching people how to like control their stress and get people sleeping. And all
that
of a sudden,
game changer there.
All of a sudden, we had all these 35, 40-year-old SEALs that, man, they all of a sudden they could perform like they could 10 years ago. And so, you know, that's really the key to health and longevity. But we have damaged ourselves a lot. And then that's why we need other modalities to try to, you know, kind of correct that. Like I said, push everybody. My goal for every team guy I work with is I want to be able to hand their lab and all their studies over to a colleague and say, who do you think this is? And they'll say, athletic 25-year-old man, right? That's what I want them to look like on paper. And then they at least have that potential. Now, whether or not they use that potential, that's up to them.
That's on them.
Yeah.
But at least you gave them an option.
Yeah, gave them the opportunity to do it.
I think that's the most important thing we can leave behind for all the guys, especially the ones we served with.
Yeah.
There's no tighter fraternity.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just taking a little time to put it together.
And there's probably no smaller fraternity. I mean, there's only 10,000 of us ever that made it through Buds.
How about that?
I mean, that's a pretty small group of folks. And like we were talking about earlier, if we could just have one centralized place where everybody knew about, like,
this is where you're asking.
Like, if it was tattooed on your wrist or something. This is a Latin lung. Like, every team guy knows. You don't need to, like, whatever. The gate code's 5326, and, like, you know,
everyone knows the gate code. Everyone knows everyone else's passwords. Y'all know exactly what I'm talking about.
You find a room to sleep in, and you're here, man. You want to come shoot. You want to come hang out, and like. And then you get to talking to people, and they'll open up, and they'll be willing to, you know, get a little help on this and that. And it should just be mandatory.
As soon as your ass comes out,
I just feel like it's such an amazing group of people that if we could just, like, we could just correct all that damage and, like, do all that stuff that we know how to do already. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we don't know how to do, but I mean, I can get people 80-90% back to where they were, you know, no matter how bad off they are.
It can be anybody. It doesn't have to be a SEAL. It can be.
Yeah, I mean, I can do it with anybody, but what I'm saying is, like, this is such an amazing community. Yeah. If we could do this for this community and showcase that, that should be the health paradigm right there, because the healthcare. I mean, they all cut their throat during COVID and all the lies and BS that was spread during that, like. You know, we need healthcare providers that are focused on performance and performance and health and longevity, and not treating a disease, like waiting for a number to get to a certain place and giving a medication or something. That's not keeping them sick. Yeah. And our community, I just think about the potential of that community if they were all healthy and they were all staying in contact with each other. I mean, That'd be one of the biggest assets. That'd be one of the biggest assets this country has.
Amazing.
That'd be
awesome.
As beneficial as the military itself. It. All right, let's do it. Right.
Freaking doing it.
Well, thank you for coming on and sharing this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was good, brother.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming down. And for anybody out there, if you have any guest recommendations or anything of that sort, please comment in the YouTube below. We really appreciate your time, and we'll see you next week.